special welcome to those joining us for the first time. My name is Ted Kuntz, and I'm the president of Vaccine Choice Canada. And now to our guest this evening. We are delighted to invite Rocco to join us this evening. I know all of you were aware of his fragile medical condition earlier this year, and you sent your prayers for his recovery.
Yeah, I just want to thank everybody for that. I say, because you know I can't lie, Ted, I come to this meeting reluctantly and screaming only out of respect to my client, VCC. Yeah, I want to thank everybody and thank you for your prayers while I was ill. Just briefly, I'm not 100%. I'm still recovering. This vocal cord problem you see is likely permanent as a result of my intubation. I got ill over Christmas. Was in ICU on January 2nd. I was hospitalized, and I had myself released from medical against medical advice on the 22nd of January after going through a very brutal 12-day coma and 30-day bedridden hospitalization. I had myself transferred to a private care facility where I was 100% paralyzed. So I had to rebuild and get my strength back. I didn't return home till March 2nd. So, and then since then I continue to recuperate. I'm not 100%, which doesn't bother me because ever since I was 6 years old, every adult and every person I knew always said to me, Rocco, you know, you're not 100%. So I'm quite used to it. And I've been making my way back slowly. As I said, I still have some physical issues I'm dealing with. But, you know, by the grace of God, my mental capacities are no crazier than they were before and no less hampered than they were. So I'm mentally all there and more. My actual analytical abilities have actually increased. I that was a shock to me. I'm going to have to study that. Maybe that's what happens when you have near-death experiences, is all your abilities heightened for survival purposes. And I'm glad about that. And I want to thank all of you who sent their prayers, and especially certain close friends who've been there for me, who visit me regularly. I'm really appreciative of that. And so I had my first court appearance on May 31st, which is not long ago. It was a motion to strike on the Action for Canada statement of claim that we filed in British Columbia. The court is still reserved on that. And in early June, I had my first public appearance, I think. Joel and Margaret were there at the alternative education conference. And I got to tell you now, you know, if I speak for an hour and a half, 2 hours, it takes it out of me. I'm still working on regaining my endurance. And so I just want to update everybody on what's happened since, my wife, in addition to taking care of me and making sure I got proper care, despite the hospital fuck-ups and the care I wasn't getting that I wanted, and that's a long story that'll become public later. We have not, my office has continued to pursue the other cases we had promised to pursue, so we are continuing on with the doctor's cases we're doing. I had a couple of them argued and decided before I went into coma with Dr. Turek. I had not an insignificant win in Dr. Turek's case where I brought the judicial review, but the divisional court said, well, since, you know, they haven't pushed ahead to discipline her yet, we're going to say that this application is moot and therefore we're not going to hear it now. Come back to us when and if they discipline her. But as part of that challenge, I challenged the College of Physician and Surgeon of Ontario's directive of April 30th of 2021, if all of you recall, maybe not. In that directive, the CPSO said that no doctor or surgeon shall criticize whatsoever any policy of any public health official with respect to COVID-19, and that they could be disciplined or have their license removed if they did. Of course, Dr. Turek and other doctors, that's all they're proceeding on, is their free speech. And in that same decision that said, we're not hearing it now, they said and smacked the college a good backhand by saying, and by the way, that policy that you want to challenge, Mr. Galati, we wouldn't have reviewed it under the charter anyway, because it's not law. It's not binding on doctors. It's merely the opinion of the CPSO. So in essence, they won their short-term application to not hear me on the bigger issues with respect to the CPSO, but they lost a big issue in that the court agreed with me that if it's a question of pure speech, the CPSO cannot discipline a doctor for free speech, only for the practice of medicine and incompetence in that practice of medicine. So that was a big win. And so we're now involved in two other cases that are progressing. I had a scheduling call this morning with the divisional court. There are two cases we are pursuing. One is the Dr. Killian case, which I had taken on just before I got sick, and that was carried on by my co-director at the Constitutional Rights Center, Paul Slansky. And my spouse, Amina Shirazi, came in on behalf of, I had issued an application on behalf of Dr. Killian and her patients. And my spouse, Amina, is representing the patients. Since then, we have another doctor by the name of Dr. Kuska, and I'm representing the patients, and Paul is representing Dr. Kuska. These two cases are the first time, if you can believe it, at my insistence, the first time in the history of the CPSO where any lawyer has thought to say, hey, you know what? The patients have the greatest interest in their records and information, and no other health lawyer in the history of this practice has ever involved the patients. We are the first lawyers to say, no, the patients have rights. And they're saying to their doctor, because they're not complaining about their doctor, we don't want our information, including our identities. We've initiated the proceeding in John and Jane Stone, including our identities, handed over to the CPSO. And so now the Attorney General has come on board because we've issued a notice of constitutional question. And Dr. Killian's application is being argued September 28th. And Dr. Kuska's probably short time after that. So we're going to bat, not just for the doctors, but for the patients. Because really, somebody some disgruntled member of the public said this doctor is issuing mask exemptions. And the CPSO, what? Their inspectors get to know that you got treated for gonorrhea or had an abortion or whatever your medical condition is. It's outrageous. Outrageous. And so there's plenty of precedent for that. Years ago, I was involved in formulating a test that eventually became the O'Connor test, where victims of sexual abuse no longer had to fork over their entire therapeutic records. They go through a process where the court screens it and decides whether they're relevant to the defense or not. Anyway, make a long story short, those doctors' cases are in the thick of litigation and resolution with respect to not just the doctor's right to their records, but more importantly, the patient's rights as well, and the doctor's rights to free speech and criticizing COVID measures, which is not insignificant. So also, we made good on our promise in herding schizophrenic cats and organizing the federal workers. We filed on May 30th of this year, we filed a lawsuit on behalf of 640 federal workers who were told, take the jab or lose your job. No coincidence that two short weeks later, in that lawsuit, we also challenged the vaccine travel mandates. And it's no coincidence that 2 weeks later, our illustrious prime minstrel, I'm referring to him as Prime Minstrel Trudeau, actually suspended the travel vaccine. I think he's playing, he's going to try to play cat and mouse with us and say to the court that, oh, you don't need to hear the case anymore because we've suspended the travel mandates. But of course, they have to hear the case because they've also sued. They've also sued for back pay in violation of their charter rights. So that's been filed. On June 15th, the other set of schizophrenic cats we heard it were the Ontario health workers. That's nurses, doctors, hospital workers who were put to the same extortive intimidation by the provincial governments through their hospitals. And in the province, if you want to sue the Crown for damages, you have to give them 60 days notice. So we furnish that 60-day notice with the statement of claim as a proverbial draft statement of claim, but it's going to be the statement of claim. And you have to give them 60 days notice before you can issue with the court. And that 60 days is up on August 15th, so we're filing. And we're 92% to the point of having organized the third huge case, which we're calling the first responder and essential workers case, same MO, and that's police, firefighters, ambulance drivers, sanitation workers, and transit workers at various municipalities across the province of Ontario. And I will be giving notice by August 15th and filing that October 15th, and that'll go. So those are the cases that are ongoing. The VCC case that we filed in 2020, the CBC was threatening a what they call an anti-slap motion because they're a broadcaster. So we've decided as a to cut them loose because under the law, if somebody brings an anti-slap motion, the entire case cannot proceed any farther. So we're going to discontinue against them and be putting the defendants on notice to either plead and or bring whatever motions to strike that they threaten to bring. Otherwise, we're moving and we intend to move in any event for summary judgment on that. So that's going to move ahead. What I want people to remember, and this has been frustrating to me for no end, is that the VCC, I call it the VCC, there are other plaintiffs in there. Of course, the VCC claim that was initiated in 2020 was initiated as a shot across the bow because nobody else was coming forward. It is a massive general umbrella challenge that effectively aimed itself at two really serious concerns. The possibility of mandatory strap you down vaccination and the masking. Soon after we filed, they quickly in Ontario backpedaled and put in regulations that allowed you masking exemptions in the wording and scope that we were advocating. So the masking injunction became moot because anybody could invoke an exemption who had the wherewithal to do so. And they then never did bring in mandatory vaccines. If they pretend to, we'll be in there on a fast injunction. But what I want people to understand, and we've been saying this from the beginning, is that this is not Hollywood. Constitutional issues are not always resolved in the courtroom. They're resolved by preemptive action that has the government have a second sober thought about what they're doing. Okay, so it's not as if the VCC challenges had no effect, particularly in Ontario. It has had a huge effect on what the government has thought they can or can't do. Second of all, it's always been, VCCs, as VCC put out their statement to you members last year, it's not that they want to be the exclusive proprietary monopoly to litigation. A lot of the issues that were raised, for instance, in the umbrella challenge by VCC are now being pursued within the specifics of the federal workers challenge, the health workers, the first responders. You have to understand, you can't just challenge everything at large, although we pleaded the whole agenda back in 2020 and we're called conspiracy theorists. And everything that we put in there 2 years ago has come to be and more, right? So, yeah, people have to look at the total picture of what this law office is doing with the various clients we represent, all right? And that everyone has a litigation strategy, and it's not in my interest or anybody else's to fully divulge that litigation strategy to the other side, okay? That has to be understood. So the other thing, too, that people have to understand is that in the initial claim in 2020, we did not seek monetary damages because if you did, you would have to, you needed the leave of the court. What we sought was declaratory relief strictly on the law. With the federal claim, the BC action, the health worker claim, and the first responder claim, we're actually asking for money for the plaintiffs because they've been directly affected. They've been directly affected in terms of loss of their job, their dignity, their charter rights. And so the stakes have gone up significantly. And I think this is one of the reasons we have become more and more of a threat to the governments, okay? And I'll be open to taking some questions later. And to just make you understand the level of the threat that we've become, 2 years ago I predicted, and I also mentioned it to Ezra Levant in the interview he did with me about a year ago, that eventually the governments will try to move to paint. And Ted, you'll remember we had this discussion many times early on as we were moving along. They'll try to paint critics of the COVID measures as terrorists. Okay. And you see what's happening to the truck convoy. People they're trying to persecute. So UNESCO has a committee that was struck in 2017 to deal with the radicalization, primarily in the Muslim community, of Canadians who were going abroad to fight in conflicts. And it's called the, I can't remember the exact name, the committee, the Committee for Prevention of Radicalization, Terrorist and Violent Conduct, right? Well, this lame UN agency commissioned a report by about 12, you know, scraped bottom of the barrel academics at the University of Sherbrooke and two at the University of Quebec in Montreal, UQAM, and some of their students and researchers. And this group of, quote, academics put out a 130-page report in French only that came to my attention 2 days ago that was published, released May 30th, just 6 weeks ago, in which they highlight, based on social media posts only, and I only use Twitter, they have me down as using Facebook. I don't use Facebook. I think they're confused with Wholehearted Media, which I ran with Raji Kavli. But so they highlight 45 people who they say are the leaders, who are leaders and the leading conspiracy theorists in Canada and Quebec. And they really hone in on three or four of us. Me, Maxime Bernier, and Ezra Levant, and Stéphane Blais, who heads the Fondation in Quebec. And what they're saying in this report is that we are encouraging and fostering radicalization, terrorism, and violent actions through the anti-COVID-19 measures. Now, this is the first time I've ever seen a UN agency report commissioned, but not published in all the official languages of the UN. They've only published it in French. Obviously, their intention is to slide it through and see if they can get me, Ezra, and Maxine listed, and maybe everybody on that list, on the terrorist list under the criminal code. And so that's basically the state of that.
It tells me, Rocco.
I think, you know, I have enough confidence that Ted Kunz will also be on that list with me when they put us on the list. And BCC maybe. But I've warned everybody at BCC for 2 years of that. I don't think anybody will say that I'm lying, that I didn't see this coming. But seeing it coming and have it actually happen are two different things. And I'm not putting up with this shit I'd never have. So that's the wrap-up, as it were, the long and short of what's happening. And let me check my notes, Your Honor, in case I missed anything.
What it tells me, Rocco, is they're afraid of crossing you in court.
Well, I think they're not just afraid of me. They're afraid of all of you who see the shit from the fresh air, right? And of course, they're not just afraid of me. And, you know, I did an interview with the reporter for Rebel News in Montreal yesterday and said, well, why do you think they're doing this? I said, well, think about it logically. They've targeted Bernier for the political movement against these measures. They've targeted Ezra Levant as the primary alternative media criticizing these measures. And they've targeted me as the primary juridical obstacle, the legal obstacle to their measures. I mean, they're quite calculated and they're depraved, Nazi-like propaganda, right? I mean, how do you do a report like that? And, you know, you can look it up. It's on the internet. How do you do a report like that without even calling the people you're writing about? You know, how does a lawyer my caliber, with all the successes I've had in the courtroom, all of a sudden become a conspiracy theorist encouraging radicalization, terrorism, and violence? Really? Are they fucking serious? Now, there have been a couple of articles right away in Quebec saying, this is ludicrous, saying Galati, Levin, the other person on this list is the actress Lucy, I can't remember her last name right now, who's quite vocal on the streets of Montreal. How dare they put this label? And it's interesting, you know, because they use the old CIA bullshit definition of a conspiracy theorist. And that doesn't even make sense. They define a conspiracy theorist as a person who believes that all major human events are directed by some secret society somewhere. Well, let's break that down, okay? Number one, I, Maxine, or Ezra, none of these people fit that definition. But unless you're talking about the rotation of the Earth and geophysics that are immune to human interaction, if you're talking about socio-economic and political decisions of human societies, decisions are made either in the open or in secret or a combination of both. So what the fuck is the big deal to know and concede that certain major events and decisions are made in secret? That's a fact, not all of them. So they're creating a straw man and expecting it to scream when they torture. It's a ridiculous, so people don't even analyze past that point. So, and I've said this before and I'll say it again, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, I'm a conspiracy analyst. And I think I and my clients in the COVID context did a pretty good job 2 years ahead of the game in analyzing this conspiracy. It's a conspiracy. Yeah, so what? To me, that's not a dirty word, because conspiracy is an indictable criminal code offense under the criminal code. And conspiracy is an actionable tort in civil law. Okay, there you have it. So that's about all I have to say so far, subject to any questions, of which I reserve the right not to answer. We'll be right back.
Thank you.